Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 7, Text 16. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukritin arjuna artho jignyasur artharti Jnani cha Bharatarshabha. O best among the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, the desirer of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching after, who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. Purport. Unlike the miscreants, these are adherents of the regulative principles of the scriptures, and they are called Sukritinaha, or those who obey the rules and regulations of scriptures, the moral and social laws, and are more or less devoted to the Supreme Lord. Out of these there are four classes of men: those who are sometimes distressed, those who are in need of money, those who are sometimes inquisitive, and those who are sometimes searching after knowledge of the Absolute Truth. These persons come to the Supreme Lord for devotional service under different conditions. These are not pure devotees because they have some aspiration to fulfill in exchange for devotional service. Pure devotional service is without aspiration and without desire for material profit. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu defines pure devotion thus: Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmadhyanavritam anukulena krishnanushilanang bhaktirutama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. When these four kinds of persons come to the Supreme Lord for devotional service and are completely purified by the association of a pure devotee, they also become pure devotees. As far as the miscreants are concerned, for them devotional service is very difficult because their lives are selfish, irregular, and without spiritual goals. But even some of them, by chance, when they come in contact with a pure devotee, also become pure devotees. Those who are always busy with fruitive activities come to the Lord in material distress, and at that time associate with pure devotees and become, in their distress, devotees of the Lord. Those who are simply frustrated also come sometimes to associate with the pure devotees and become inquisitive to know about God. Similarly, when the dry philosophers are frustrated in every field of knowledge, they sometimes want to learn of God, and they come to the Supreme Lord to render devotional service, and thus transcend knowledge of the impersonal Brahman and the localized Paramatma, and come to the personal conception of Godhead by the grace of the Supreme Lord or His pure devotee. On the whole, when the distressed, the inquisitive, the seekers of knowledge, and those who are in need of money are free from all material desires, and when they fully understand that material remuneration has nothing to do with spiritual improvement, they become pure devotees. As long as such a purified stage is not attained, devotees in transcendental service to the Lord are tainted with fruitive activities, the search for mundane knowledge, etc. So one has to transcend all this before one can come to the stage of pure devotional service. In this verse, Krishna discusses pious people. The word is used is sukritinaha, people who have done some good works. There's another term also, punyavan, one who has got punya. So these two terms are often seen as synonymous, Punya is generally understood to mean material piety, as distinguished from pure devotional service. So pious people come to Krishna and impious people don't come to Krishna. Impious people, they won't come to Krishna. Matiya na Krishna paratasvato vamito bibhadyeta grihavratanam adanta go bhir vishatanta misram punaf punas charvita charvananam. Persons who have decided that they're not going to be Krishna conscious don't become Krishna conscious. Even by their own so-called spiritual endeavors, even if they get well advised to do so, they may have so many philosophies, but their real aim of life is simply to gratify the senses. And in this way, they chew that which has already been chewed and go to hell. So pious people, they're different. They have some inclination toward God at some level, and therefore among devotees we often talk about pious people. We went to a certain town, we found there were many pious people. Such and such a person is a pious person. It doesn't mean they're a pure devotee, but they are naturally inclined to be favorable toward devotees and to be open to Krishna consciousness, or to, without even thinking about it much, they'll join in the dancing and the kirtan. They'll happily take prasadam and enjoy it, whereas people are impious, they don't like to take prasadam at all. So this is what you call a pious person. It means generally someone who's very simply and naturally accepts Krishna consciousness, or simply and naturally is inclined to turn toward God. Recently I saw some statistics which were put out by atheists in their ongoing battle with anti-atheists. I don't know if we should call those the Christians who are combating the atheists, theists. They're very undeveloped theism. But anyway, that's another point altogether. So this presentation showed that, or it brought out the point that often theists, they say that, well, we have many scientists who are also theists, so it's not that science makes you automatically atheistic, or they profess that we have many scientists on our side, as if to justify that actually it's propaganda against the generally propagated idea that people who know science, they're more intelligent and they're more educated, and so they don't believe in God. It's only stupid people who believe in God. So this atheistic propaganda said that, although some scientists may believe in God, they gave statistics that the great majority don't, and that if you go a higher level of scientists, the higher level you get among them, the less percentage of theists there are among them. So therefore the conclusion is that the more intelligent you are, the less likely you are to believe in God, and there may be one or two very intelligent people but who do believe in God, but anyway, that's just an aberration. It happens in evolution. Then there may be some strange things that come out also, but the general course is that people who are more intelligent, they don't believe in God. Now, of course, this begs the question that the education itself is atheistic. So the more educated you are in atheistic education, the more likely you are going to be atheistic. You know, for instance, we find that among the Vaishnavas, who are definitely theistic in the best sense of the term, there are many highly educated people. And if people are educated in this intelligent system of knowledge to understand God, then they won't be atheistic. It's not that because you're more educated and you're more intelligent than that you're necessarily atheistic. It depends what kind of education you get also. So, the modern society is very complex. So complex. And it's not surprising if people become more atheistic, and especially they go through so many years of school in which explicitly or implicitly the whole tenor is atheistic. And no one gives what they're given, the knowledge at school, it's presented, or science, it's so wonderful, and this is real intelligence. And when it comes to religion, no one presents anything intelligently at all. And it's not surprising if people associate intelligence with skepticism about everything, actually, except science. They should be skeptic about science also, which actually the Vedantic position. I say Vedantic because it's not only Vaishnava. There in Vedanta there are two main divisions. There's Advaita and, well, for want of a better term, Dvaita. Well, that's oversimplistic to say that. Anyway, let's say Vaishnavs and Mayavadis. Because some of the Vaishnavas, their philosophy, their Shuddhadvaita, Vallabh's philosophy, and Vishishtadvaita is Ramanuja. They profess to be Advaita. They're also Advaitavadis, according to their own philosophy. So all classes of Vedantists, not only Vedantists, but generally the followers of the Vedas, they are skeptical about any system or any method, any epistemology, except Shabda Praman, especially the Vedantists. Because they say that within what would be the modern scientific system, it depends on Pratyaksha and Anuman. Without Pratyaksha and Anuman are also accepted by Vaishnavas and by Vedantists, but only as supports to Shabda Praman. And Pratyaksha and Anuman, they are less reliable sources of knowledge. And without Shabda, you're definitely going to be in trouble following these. Pratyaksha means sensory perception. Anuman means hypothesis based on sense perception. What you've seen, you hypothesize about it. There is smoke on the hill. Well, that's another. That's a kind of Anuman. There's smoke on the hill, so that where there is smoke, there is fire. So the Vedic system is skeptical of the modern scientific system from the outset because of Brahm Pramad Vipralipsa Karna Patav. The mistakes are there of the defects of Pratyaksha, that one tends to make mistakes, one tends to be confused or illusioned, Brahm Pramad, one tends to cheat. Oh, scientists don't cheat, do they? You wouldn't expect this. Scientists, you know, they're very noble people. They wouldn't cheat or fudge their figures to get a research project, research funding. And karanapatav, the senses are imperfect anyway. Yes. So, in so many ways, the scientific system, which is people who think they're trained in science, they're skeptical about what they perceive as being non-scientific, but they're not skeptic about science. But they should be if they just think a little deeper. But they don't get to think that deeply because they don't come to the Vedic knowledge. So, generally we see that simple people, they're more open to Krishna consciousness, which suggests that it's the natural tendency of the living being to be pious, but modern education kills it. Not education per se, but modern education, which teaches one to be doubtful about everything, which puts oneself in the position of God, because oneself becomes the arbiter of everything in that case. So there are many faults if we start to think about it or discuss it at a little deeper level than just this atheist presenting. You see, most scientists are atheistic, and the more higher level they are, the more atheistic they are. That's based on the premise that this education is that it actually reveals the nature of reality, and that one is actually more intelligent by being more educated. Well, in one sense you are. In one sense you are. If you're someone who's an atomic physicist, it's not everyone that can become an atomic physicist. You have to be intelligent, diligent, and be trained over many years. One has to be at a higher level of intelligence than most people. But the intelligence that is concentrated on the wrong thing is not very intelligent. Just like if your house is on fire and you're still looking through your microscope and saying, well, I'm making some wonderful discoveries here. In the meantime, you're going to burn down with your whole laboratory. Well, that's what's going on. The scientists are making all wonderful discoveries. In the meantime, janma mrityu jara vyadhi, their birth, death, old age, and disease, they are they're being crushed by the wheels of time. But they don't see pashyanapi na pashyati. They're so busy investigating what is ultimately superfluous. They take this world so seriously. It's like, you know, doing a PhD on the latrine or something like that. You go into someone's house and they have a beautiful house, and then the thing you're most interested in is the latrine, and you put all the emphasis, all your attention. Oh, what kind of latrine have you got? Oh, what a wonderful, oh, beautiful. Perfectly. Let's do a project here to study it, neglecting the whole of the rest of the house. That's what materialists are doing, because they're cockroaches in the commode, and therefore they think this toilet is the ultimate, the be all, the end all, and there's nothing beyond this. Beyond this toilet, there's nothing that exists, and I'm a highly educated cockroach, so don't argue with me. What do you mean there's beyond this? What do you mean there's nothing beyond? What are you talking about? Prove it. So, simplicity by which one can take to devotional service. Otherwise, without that, one gets in trouble, as everyone always does in this material world, and then he blames God, or he says, well, that's proof there's no God, because if there was God, he wouldn't make troubles for me, he wouldn't make life. God means all good, and therefore, despite the fact that I'm killing animals and exploiting people and cheating people, and either in this life or a previous life, but surely God will do everything nice for me. Yeah, so they reject, there can't be any God. If there was any God, he wouldn't put me, I wouldn't be in this trouble. And when things go well, they say, well, what are you, believing in God? Well, I don't believe in God. See, I'm doing well. I don't believe in God. I don't need any God to help me. That's the atheistic attitude. Whereas a person of theistic mentality, when things go well, he doesn't become puffed up and he thinks it's the mercy of God. And when things go badly, he also thinks it's the mercy of God. God is helping me to realize that this material world is not a nice place. He's given me a slight punishment for all the bad things that I've done. That's how a simple person thinks. He doesn't reject God because he's suffering in this world. So Sharalata, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, Sharalata, simplicity is the first qualification of a Vaishnav. But that doesn't mean that one is stupid. It might mean that, in general, as we say, that pious people, we tend to see they are less educated, but that's a lot to do with the whole modern educational system rather than an intrinsic quality of the conditioned soul. Is that if they're stupid, they're pious and they believe in God. Is not necessarily true at all, though it might seem true in the modern milieu, in which education is to turn you into a demon. So, simplicity is required. Just simplicity, we generally think of it not a good quality, but it is a good quality even for intelligent people, in which they can see, they can grasp the essence. There are so many complex discussions, but someone can just summarize it all in a very simple, straightforward, and clear way and grasp the basic principles. Instead of always getting hung up on some detail. So that kind of simplicity is good. But it's why we say that simplicity is the first qualification of a Vaishnava. To accept, yes, well, we're all controlled, that means there must be a controller. Okay, that sounds pretty good. So that simplicity, that's good. But one should not be credulous, in the sense that one shouldn't accept too easily everything. Otherwise, anyone can come along and say, well, oh, there's some pious people. Well, they advertise themselves, well, I'm God, actually. And people believe. They're pious, but they're not very intelligent. Whereas an atheistic person would be skeptical. And say, well, God, wait a minute. How can you be God? Just an ordinary person. So we should be simple enough to accept that there is the Supreme Lord. At the same time, we shouldn't be so simple that to think that blind faith is a good quality. Faith is a quality, no doubt. Shadhavan. What is that? That word comes up so many times. Shadhavan jan hoy bhakti adhikari. One who is faithful he is eligible to take to devotional service. Shraddha vallabhate jnanam. One who is faithful can attain knowledge. That's true in any field, even in the field of mundane science. One should be simple, but not... that doesn't mean that one suspends one's intelligence. One realizes that the God is beyond our intelligence to understand, but not totally and wholly. That's almost like the Islamic understanding of Allah. It's just so great and so beyond your ability to understand. Then who do you pray to? And what does it mean to believe in Allah? You're not even supposed, you can't even begin to think about him because he's so beyond him, or you, there's no word him, because he's not masculine or feminine or neuter. So becomes so different. That's like extreme dualism. That there can be no relationship between God and us. So it almost comes to the point of atheism. Extreme dualism almost comes to the point of impersonalism, because he's not accepted as a person in the way that we are persons. We are persons also, and our personality takes from his personality. The other night in Secunderabad, Sunday night, this one after the class, one devotee asked me that, well, shouldn't we just accept our guru? If our guru's in parampara and we just follow, but they don't consider this verse, evang parampara praptam imang raja shio viduhu sakale neha mahata yogo nashta parantapa. This knowledge was received in parampara, in guru-disciple succession, but in course of time it became spoiled and lost. Well, how does that happen? If you just think that what is parampara? There's a guru, and that means there's a disciple. And the disciple later becomes guru to someone else who becomes a disciple. And it goes on like this. So how does it become spoiled? It means at some point that someone says something different to his guru. And therefore, although he's officially initiated, the parampara is lost. Because the message has been changed. So if we just presume simplistically, oh, okay, Prabhupada, all right, we accept he's a pure devotee in parampara. So if my guru is initiated by Prabhupada, he must be in parampara. But they never consider that, or they never read Prabhupada's books. Maybe they're too busy reading other books, and some journeys and all this kind of thing, in which there's no actual spiritual knowledge. And they just presume that, well, my guru's Prabhupada's disciple, therefore whatever he's doing is approved by Prabhupada. It must be the same as what Srila Prabhupada said. And in this way, a lazy, overly simplistic approach by which we are liable to be cheated. So what do you do? I mean, we're supposed to, that's the quality. Guru mokha padma vakya chitete kariya aikya ana kariha mane asha. We should accept the words of the guru, the words from the lotus mouth of the guru. We should make that one with our heart and not desire anything else. But on the other hand, if the guru tells us, okay, let's all go to the disco together, and for disco dancing, I mean, he might say, let's go and preach there. It's not generally the best place to preach, but it's possible. He could. But if he tells, let's all go there and dance to the disco music, you never know, it might be coming. We already have Bollywood music at Rath Yatra. We don't know what will be next. Then the disciple should be intelligent enough to, if he's received the knowledge, he maybe even received the knowledge from the guru at one point, and then the guru himself takes a strange turn. Or he may have actually read Srila Prabhupada's books, in which they see directions such as anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam, and they may say, well, Guruji, how is going to a disco dance, how is that favorable for devotion? It seems to be unfavorable. And one should not be so simple as to think that, well, Guruji went to the disco dance, so we should also. And he wants us to go, so he'll be pleased. Or a very common, this is, well, not very common, but not, let's say, not uncommon, misuse of this principle is that you have to please the guru. So, you have a beautiful young daughter, and you can please the guru, or your wife, not unheard of. You can fill in the rest yourself. you all know, it's not unheard of. This guru prasadi, that you, when someone gets married, then you can't enjoy something. First of all, you have to offer to the guru. Only afterward you can enjoy. So your wife becomes guru prasadi. So that's a misuse of that principle. How do you know? We shouldn't be, if you're going to accept a guru, we shouldn't be skeptical. Well, we're advised to see carefully before we accept a guru. But it may be also that someone is giving good advice and later they change. Then what do you do? What should you do? Well, that's stated, guru apya avaliptasya karya karya ajanataha upanna pratipannasya parityago vidhiyate. If one is even a guru, but if he gives the wrong instructions, is not following properly himself, or doesn't know how to properly instruct, then he should be completely given up. And this is that's the general direction, the nuances of which have been discussed to some extent by Srila Narahari Sarkar in his Sri Krishna Bhajanamrita. How can one know? I mean, the attitude should be just to absorb what the guru says. Well, there's another guru. The guru who we see is supposed to represent the Chaitya Guru, the guru in the heart. So we should be in contact with the guru in the heart. It means Krishna also. That doesn't mean that we just have our own fantastic mental speculation, but that we see guru, sadhu, shastra, not guru, guru, guru. And not shastra, 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 and not sadhu, 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 but guru, sadhu, and shastra. And Krishna gives the intelligence, dadami buddhi yogam tam. Tesham satata yuktanang bhajatang priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. If we're actually very serious to come to Krishna, Krishna helps us and gives us the intelligence, even if our guru's intelligence is spoiled. Krishna gives us the intelligence by which we can come to him. Even if someone is acting as a guru and he's saying all the right things and doing all the right things, but then changes and the disciple may be intelligent enough to understand. He's changed, he's not on the right path. He may change also some policy or some attitude or even some philosophical position. And that's more subtle. But for instance, we don't see nowadays in the Gaudiya Sampradaya Svakiyavadis, those who promote that Krishna is married to the gopis, though there were previously, and Jiva Goswami upholds Swakiyavad, whereas later Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur corrects him, if you would, and from that time the whole Gaudiya Sampradaya Parakiyavad is accepted, that Krishna and the gopis, they're not married. So which is true? Both. Depends where you want to go in the spiritual world. So it may be that even on some philosophical point that one may change the position, but the basic principle, as Srila Prabhupada has described in this purport to the verse that we read today, anya bhilashita shunyam jnana kama adhyana avritam anukulyena krishna anushila bhakti rutama, of selflessness, complete dedication to Krishna, that is the basic principle. And from that will come Satsiddhanta, the proper understanding. And if one is not fixed on this, then the improper understandings may come. Within Satsiddhanta, there may be sub-Siddhantas, mixing an English prefix with an important Sanskrit word. There may be sub-Siddhantas also. Just like Swakiyavad, Parakiyavad, there may be both are acceptable. Or there may be devotees who see Lakshmi Narayana as supreme, or Rama supreme, and that it's not fill. If we discuss from the point of view of rasa vichara, then Gauriyas will definitely come out on top. We declare that, but it's not rejected. The Gauriyas of Radha Krishna, Parakiya Bhav, that will come out on top, but it's not rejected at all within the realm of pure devotional service to accept Rama as one's life and soul. Srinathe Janaki Nathe Abheda Paramatmani Tatapi Mama Sarvasvam Rama Kamala Lochanaha. This is from Ramayana, and it's quoted by Narottam Das Thakur in his Prem Bhakti Chandrika, just after the Sanyabhilashita Shunyam. He quotes some Sanskrit verses in there also. He quotes Sanyabhilashita Shunyam also. So this is spoken by Hanuman. He says that Srinath, which means Narayana, or if you happen to be a Gauriya, then you know that Srinath actually means Krishna. And Janakinath, Rama, Chandra, Dasharath, Sutta, they are the same non-different supreme person. But anyway, as far as I'm concerned, I'm all for Ram. I'm interested in Ram. So he's my all in all, my life and soul. So that Guru may change in some ways. He may emphasize different things within Vaishnavism. But then the principle of pure devotional service, he never compromises on that or misrepresents it. And Krishna gives the intelligence to see that. It is recorded in the Bhagavatam, the same Bhagavatam that states Guru Devatatma, that one should see Guru as just like God, Guru, and one's life and soul. So that's in Bhagavatam, and it's Samasta Shastra. It's stated in all Shastras. Sakshad Haridvena Samasta Shastrayaruktastata Bhavyata Iva Sadhi. All these Shastras, all the great, the whole tradition, the whole Vedic culture is one of utmost reverence for Guru. It requires a kind of simplicity, it requires faith. Simplicity means implicit faith that here I am, there is transcendence, and the intermediary is Guru. And just if we surrender to Guru, then he'll take us to the other side. So it requires an implicit faith, which is, that requires some simplicity, because we can't find out the spiritual world by scientific methods. We can't find out spiritual existence. It requires faith that there is spiritual existence and that we can be elevated to that platform, but we need some help. And this is the system given, to go via Guru. So that simplicity is required, but at the same time, one has to exercise one's intelligence. Generally, the intelligence, one submits one's intelligence to be guided by the Guru, which in the modern Western way of thinking, with all this idea of freedom and individuality, to them seems horrific. The idea that you should bow down to another human being, it just seems horrific. But that is the Vedic system, that one submits one's intelligence to the Guru. That doesn't mean that one turns off one's intelligence. The Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, one sees them all, they're all together in one line. So if we see what appears to be a contradiction between Guru and Shastra, then we can go to the Guru and ask, what's going on here? And he may explain, or if we're not satisfied with the explanation, we can ask some more. If we're still not satisfied with the explanation, we may think, well, the guru's gone wrong. Krishna, he was the guru to Arjuna, and Arjuna several times said to Krishna, okay, you're telling me all these things, but it doesn't seem to make sense. So what's going on here? And then Krishna would explain, and Arjuna was, he wasn't such an easy person to convince. Arjuna didn't say, yes, 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 yes. He said, well, that doesn't seem right. And then Krishna explained, it still doesn't seem right. So Arjuna, he put various objections based on his misunderstanding of Shastra. You'll find that Arjuna used all these words, karma, janma, aparambhavato janma. So Arjuna, he asked Krishna, and Krishna explains everything to him. But if Krishna was not a bona fide guru, or if Arjuna was not a bona fide disciple, then we might find that there's a rift between them. The guru rejects the disciple, or the disciple rejects the guru. The famous example of that is Bali Maharaj, who rejected his guru. It's tremendous risk to reject your guru. Tremendous risk. The Shastra that we're quoting this, the guru should be rejected if he's not properly, but the general injunction of Shastra is that one should have full faith and follow. And to reject a guru is it's worse than anything you can do. So there's a tremendous risk that Bali Maharaj took. But Krishna inspired him from within the heart, because actually he had the formal guru of Shukracharya, but he was taking shiksha from who? Prahlad Maharaj. And Prahlad Maharaj was in Parampara. Who was he initiated by? He was initiated by Narad when? When was he initiated by Narad? In the womb? How was he initiated? Initiation means tapa puna. You're supposed to put this hot symbols and then the tilak and then give a name. When was he initiated? Mantra, yeah. So in that sense he was initiated. There was no formal initiation. The essence he gave of spiritual knowledge. Otherwise he wasn't, formally he wasn't initiated. It was not possible that Narad formally initiated him. So Dali Maharaj, he understood what was right. He was like Prahlad in the sense that he was living among the demons, but he understood what was right. He was secretly in his heart, he was maintaining the right understanding. But somewhat different also, because Prahlad after all was a small boy, whereas Bali was actually the leader of all the demons, and he'd led the charge up to the heavenly planets and taken over. He was acting as the best demon in the history of demonism. There wasn't much of a history at that time because the universe hadn't been going on long. But it's a standard thing that the demons attack the devas and the devas win. But this time Bali Maharaj won. So he was really the best of all time. But in his heart he was doing it as a duty, but he was actually a Vaishnava. So at great risk he rejected his guru, but as a result he attained Krishna. If he had not done, then he wouldn't have attained Krishna. So the principle anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya vajanam is in every sphere. Even one may reject one's guru if necessary to attain Krishna. Now this is also often misused, and we find in the Gaudiya world, there's a lot of disciple poaching. It's not much going on now. There was a lot going on when there were elderly Gaudiya mat sannyasis traveling around the world and presenting themselves as more advanced than everyone else. And if you're going to be Krishna conscious, you have to come to me. You won't get it through all these neophytes in ISKCON. That was the propaganda going on. So not much now, but that may be misused. this idea of you can reject your guru. One should be extremely cautious in such a matter, but again, one should not be so simple that one is misled. So simplicity is a good quality, but to be too simple, that one's simplicity is not tempered with intelligence, that is also dangerous. Krishna je bhaje she boro chotur, that's stated in the Krishna ashtotara shatanama. Used to be famous in Bengal. Nowadays, Bengal means, what is it? Naxali, bomb front on one side and Mamatar on the other, and who cares about Krishna? And Muslims in East Bengal. So, Mamatar means Mamatar Banerjee. No, actual Mamatar, that's what we want. Mamatar means a sense of I-ness, intense affection for Krishna. It happens to be the name of politician. So, that simplicity in which we can just appreciate Krishna. Just like that story is there of the cobbler and the brahmana. The brahmana was very sophisticated and knowledgeable and was worshipping God day and night, but he didn't believe that Narayana can put an elephant through the eye of a needle. Whereas the cobbler, who is engaged in filthy work dealing with skins of animals, very low class, uneducated, he immediately accepted. Oh, when Narada told him that, oh, Narayana is putting an elephant through the eye of a needle, immediately accepted, simplicity. And then I said, how can you believe? I don't believe it myself. I'm supposed to be the greatest devotee. How do you believe it? And he said, well, if he wants, he can do it. I'm sitting underneath this tree, and every seed there's a tree. So he can put an elephant through the eye of a needle. Why not? Actually, he can do, because he can make the elephant so small it can go through, or he can make the needle so big, or adjust the sizes of them. He can do whatever he likes. Yeah, even if we don't understand. So that simplicity, that actually, with that simplicity, then we can appreciate Krishna, and we can appreciate Krishna's pastimes. And generally we see simple devotees, they like to hear Krishna's pastimes and the story of how Krishna does this and Krishna does that. And but at the same time, they can be misled also. Very easily. So to be able to appreciate or to like to hear Krishna's pastimes is a very good quality. But to be misled, that's not a good quality. People who have more of mundane education, they actually need more of philosophical discussion, because they can't accept Krishna Leela very easily, and they may not even be so much attracted to it. Generally, if we go in the colleges, in India especially, and we start talking about science, and then they become interested. We say, well, in the Vedas there's this knowledge of science and that knowledge of science, and this scientist said that about Krishna consciousness very favorably, and then they become very interested. If you tell them a famous scientist appreciates Krishna consciousness, and they think, oh, that's very good. they're so much enamored by science. So people who are more messed up, less simple, they need their doubts addressed. The kind of talk that I'm giving now is not the kind of talk that simple people would very much appreciate, probably. They say, well, come on, you know. They'd be asleep by now. But if there's stories of Krishna Leela, especially some stories we never heard before, then it becomes charming to all. But for those of us who are not so simple, we need this kind of discussion so that we can become simple and relish Krishna Leela. so that we can, and when we need also, it's not always we discuss philosophy, we can read Krishna book and hear about the pastimes of Krishna. That is ultimately the goal of life, to relish hearing about Krishna. I have some notes about that also. We should just be absorbed in hearing about Krishna. Isn't that a fact? We should be absorbed in hearing about Krishna's wonderful pastimes. Uttama shloka charitam sarva loka sukhavaham. The pastimes of Krishna. Uttama shloka, the best shlokas are meant for describing him. By hearing about his activities, the whole world can become happy. So shouldn't we just absorb ourselves in Krishna Leela? Yes, we should. But then, shouldn't we be cautious also? Yes, also. So, we also need to discuss philosophy. We need to discuss that. Both sides, because bhakti means bhakti vedanta. Krishna himself is vedanta krit. He gave vedanta. Of course, when I say the gopis, they're not big vedantists. We just want to be like the gopis, but the gopis, they are big vedantists. They come to this world and write the Shatchandarbhas and Laghu Bhagavatamrita and so many philosophical works. But this, we may say, let them do that. Let them come to this world and write Laghu Bhagavatamrita. I'll just stay in the spiritual world and steal Krishna's lunchbox. They may say like that. But they come to this world and give us this knowledge so that we may take advantage of that. So that bhidyate hridyagrantis chidyante sarvasangshayaha. This is required. By hearing the Bhagavatam, all the attachments in the heart will be pierced and the doubts will be slashed. So that's required. Therefore, tachchadadhana muniyo, shradadhana means with faith. Faith and simplicity go together. But tachchadadhana muniyo, Muni, the thoughtful person, should be faithful also. You may think, well, that's a contradiction, but no. Tachadadhana muniyo jnana vairagya yuktaya pashanti atmani chatmanam bhaktya shuta grihitaya. That bhakti is received through the knowledge of Shastra by a person who is both faithful and thoughtful. The two are not contradictory. They go together very well. Jnana vairagya. Often we see devotees who are very simple and they like to hear Leela, but there should be some vairagya also. If they're actually so advanced that they're relishing Krishna Leela, then it shouldn't be that after they go, they listen to Krishna Leela, they go home and watch the cricket on TV, which we often see. That those who are very simple and they're not much interested in hearing philosophy, they like to hear stories of Krishna, but they don't manifest symptoms of actually being spiritually advanced. It might seem that their relishing of the pastimes of Krishna is a sign of being spiritually advanced, but then you have to see what happens when they go home. Also, it may be that people they may appear to be spiritually advanced. You see people, they're relishing the kirtan, they're really into it, but when the kirtan stops, we don't see that they're seriously concentrating their mind on Krishna and trying to become free from sense gratification. So, is it real ecstasy or isn't it? We should consider. Bhakti Vedanta. I had some other points. Where are those? Mm. And many years ago, one of my god brothers told me that, he said, well, you know, all this philosophical preachings, well, why bother? He said, I concentrate on village people. They're simple. They can take to Krishna consciousness very easily. And they're, I'm paraphrasing a bit here. They can take to Krishna consciousness very easily. They're all spirit souls, so if you can get a lot of people going back to Godhead, then why concentrate on all these difficult people? So that's one phase of preaching. Srila Prabhupada, he concentrated he wanted to preach to everyone, but his particular focus was on the more intelligent. His books were meant for intelligent and sincere people, with the idea that if the intelligent come, then everyone else will follow. It's the intelligent people who are spoiling the world through their education system and their mass media and all this. So even if we preach to the simple people, and they'll take to Krishna consciousness very nicely, but mostly they're still bewildered by the misleading propaganda that comes from the misled intelligent people, from the education system, from the mass media. And so we find that even though many simple people may come, but they, without philosophical understanding, their anarthas will remain. Their misunderstandings will remain. So even if people are very simple, it's not that they're simple and they'll take to Krishna consciousness very easily, but it doesn't mean that they don't have to have their misunderstandings straightened out. It's not that they're totally unintelligent, and their intelligence is misdirected. So that has to be addressed also. So definitely, definitely we want, the whole aim is to develop our heart's natural attraction to Krishna. But at the same time, we warn, fools rush in where angels fear to tread, the English saying that we'll just march in, and then we'll march into the Rasa Leela and take it over. but no, we have to get the qualification, which means absolute purity. Absolute purity, and that is, the process is given to us, that is Vairagya Vidya. It's not that being simple and then you just chant Hare Krishna, but then the anarthas have to be removed also. And the prime means for, or the essential process for doing that is by hearing. We should hear so that we can distinguish between what is real and what is unreal. And that's what is there in Gita and Bhagavatam, and it may be in somewhat simplified form in, for instance, Chaitanya Bhagavat or in Narottam Das Thakur's songs, which generally that would be read out to people, or they would sing, and they would, people, uneducated people, village people in Bengal, not educated, they can't read and write, they would hear Chaitanya Bhagavat, they would sing the songs on Narottam. The message is there. The message is there. So it's not that that's neglected for anyone. It's not that just, okay, Leela, bus. Just, that's it. We love Krishna Leela. But the anarthas, they have to be addressed also. Anarthas, they come from ignorance, from which material desire. So all these things have to be discussed. Otherwise, we tend to think that I'm a devotee, so everything I do is spiritual. My guru's a liberated soul, so it's my great good fortune if I can offer my newly married wife to him first and then take her as prasadam. People may think like that if they're not properly educated. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? All right. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.